Welcome to the Sleep Like a Boss podcast. If you're struggling with sleep and have tried everything that Google, your friends, or Facebook groups have recommended and you're still struggling, stop looking for that one thing to fix your sleep. The human body is complex and one single supplement or lifestyle fix is likely not going to be the solution. Here on the Sleep Like a Boss podcast, we dig into all aspects of sleep for you and unravel the complexity. My name is Annika Carroll. I'm the new CEO of Sleep Like a Boss, and me and my team are here to end the epidemic of sleep deprivation. Let's get started. Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of the Sleep Like a Boss podcast. I'm Annika Carroll, your host, and I have a wonderful guest today, Divya Gupta. I'm so excited to have her on the show. We're going to be talking about Hashimoto's, gut health, autoimmunity, the fun stuff that you might be like, what the heck is Hashimoto's? What are we even talking about? Something that specifically women often have and don't know. And we really want to shed some light on this. And we're doing that with Divya. And she is a board certified holistic nutritionist and a wellness coach. And she really helps people where I would say, we often feel alone, left alone by conventional medicine, where your doctor says, you know, blood work looks great, you're in good shape, you have symptoms, you don't feel well. That's where she comes in, and that's where she can help. And part of it is her personal story that drove us there, that drove her there, and we're going to go into that. And Divya, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Annika. I'm so happy to be here.
Awesome. Should we dive in? Can we talk about autoimmunity, and can we talk about Hashimoto's? Like, that's a phrase some people have heard, that word, others have not. Can we unravel that a little?
Oh, absolutely, my favorite topic to talk about. Hashimoto sounds like a fancy word.
It does.
But yeah, like autoimmunity, right? In really plain words, simply putting, your immune system has started attacking our own cells, our own glands, and our own body. The one like description, if you look up like Webster, and your autoimmunity is your body is attacking itself. It's an autoimmune condition. But why is that happening? Our immune system, I know we'll be getting into the gut a lot, but just to sprinkle it here, 70 to 80% of our immunity lies in the gut. And our immune system is here to protect us. It's not against us. And you'll be like, why, Divya? Why is it attacking ourselves when? Because its job is to attack anything that's foreign, which it seems like, hey, it's a threat. It's not supposed to be here. I'm going to attack it. But in this process, I want to say our immune system is very smart, but blind at the same time. And to put it in another word, it is blind because, you know, when we have any infection or bacteria, you know, everyone at some point in their life, you know, we fall sick, we have an infection, or we have a cold, our body produces like antibodies, which then it is, hey, this is here. So our immune system knows we can go attack it with whatever tools. It could be a sword or a gun, whatever it weapons it uses, attack it. So it's going after the shape that sort of recognizes it's in its program. I get it. It looks like this funny picture. I'm going to go attack all of that. But in autoimmunity, since it's blind, it's going to go attack some of the antibodies that are created are very similar in structure to our own tissues and glands. And this is called molecular mimicry. And then in this process, that's how when it sees the same shape, and then Hashimoto's, we'll dive into that, because it attacks our thyroid. It starts attacking the thyroid and Hashimoto's, but then we have like several autoimmune conditions out there. It could be in your joints, that could be rheumatoid arthritis, in your muscle, and the you know fibromyalgia, you know, celiac disease is another form of autoimmune disease. So it can just, because it's just going after the shape. So that's why our immune system is very smart. It wants, it's just trying to protect us, but it just starts attacking itself. So yeah.
Yeah, so what, and you were saying it could be caused by something like a pathogen. So something that enters your system, probably if you're in a state that you're not your strongest at, right? When we're maybe a little stressed out, burnt out, immune system has been compromised for some other reasons. Maybe we've gone through some infections and then something else, like the rain barrel is just full and it just eventually overflows. Is that kind of how we can think of it?
Yeah, a lot of it. I think you mentioned a lot of great, like, you know, triggers behind that autoimmunity, that attack, and sleep as well. How many, and you know, you are the sleep boss, right? You're the CEO. Come, we know people aren't sleeping well, or not getting enough sleep, or not getting enough quality of sleep. And that is also a huge stressor to your immune system. It just dysregulates your HPA, your hypothalamus, pituitary to adrenal gland, and that could be another trigger. Then your immune system is down, you're fatigued, and your body, your immune system is like, I don't know who should I be attacking, and starts attacking it. But yeah, absolutely right. That could be pathogens, you know, as we will get into the topic of the gut, you know, that could be infections, that could be food sensitivity going on, even stress and trauma. I think we should deal with those things as toxins too, because that have the same, and you know, the cascade of what happened inside the body when we deal with stress, it's similar. The whole cortisol shooting up, blood sugar dysregulation. How many people here are metabolically unhealthy? Low stomach acid as well. It just creates a perfect environment for pathogens to grow downstream. And yes, and there's no, I think I'll quote Dr. Fasano. He's an Italian gastroenterologist, where there's a three-legged stool for an autoimmunity to occur. And number one is, okay, it could be your genes, right? You know, there are all, we all are born with certain genes, we can't change it. But there's also the science of epigenetics, where how are those expressed? But also the leaky gut. I'll just make it simple. We'll get into that. And some trigger or root cause that triggers this whole cascade. And that could be any one of these that we just listed above.
Absolutely. And some of my clients will be like, I hear you. The stomach acid, the pathogen. Yeah, exactly. And that's, I think, why. And the other thing is with autoimmunity, I had a podcast episode a few episodes ago where I talked to somebody also about autoimmunity, but she's more in the rheumatoid arthritic area. But it's really this, women are so much more prone to have autoimmunity. And if we have one diagnosis, right, the chances that some years down the road, you're going to get another one because your system is already compromised and working against itself, are actually not low. So that's why I'm always like, people, if you have any kind of autoimmune condition, please, 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 please work with somebody to make sure you're in the best shape you can be, just to preserve your health as long as you can, right? And don't set your body up for more and more conditions down the road. We're going to all get stuff when we age, just from aging potentially, right? So we want to keep that thing like in check as much as we can. No. And what is the big connection? What is that? Let's go to gut first. What is the big connection with autoimmunity and gut health?
No, absolutely. I'm going to answer one of your previous questions, which I was like, maybe I didn't do full justice to it. What is Hashimoto's?
Yes.
You know, Hashimoto's is, again, an autoimmune condition. Like, just what we just described, could any of those reasons could lead to an autoimmune condition. That's Hashimoto's. But what it leads to is, you know, the whole molecular mimicry that I just described, it starts attacking its own gland. In Hashimoto's, it starts attacking your thyroid gland, which can lead to hypothyroidism. So it's an autoimmune condition that can cause or lead down the road to hypothyroidism. So it's two, and 90 to 95% of cases of hypothyroidism is probably Hashimoto's in the background. And unfortunately, in conventional medicine, a lot of people are not aware of it, or their doctors have not done the full testing or full panel of testing and have not really communicated that. But there is a whole autoimmune aspect behind hypothyroidism. And hypothyroidism is when your thyroid is underfunctioning, pretty much. It's not producing enough of the thyroid hormone that we need. And thyroid hormones are life. It gives us life. And thyroid, every cell in your body has a receptor for the thyroid hormone. So any function that you think of, whether it's your metabolism, your digestion, your fertility, how you feel, how you sleep, how well you sleep. Thyroid hormone has a role to play in it. And when you have hypothyroidism, it just impacts all those different areas of your life. And most probably conventionally, they'll put you on a T4 medication. We'll dive into what that is, but never really dealing with the autoimmunity aspect of it. And you're absolutely right, Anika. Like, once you have one autoimmune condition, you are 3 times likely to get another one. That's how I started in this space, because I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's at the age of 25. And I was following my mom's footsteps. She had Hashimoto's. And around the time when I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's, she also got a rheumatoid arthritis diagnosis.
Yeah.
And so this hits really close to me.
Yeah. And I totally get that. And how did you get to this Hashimoto's diagnosis? Because you're just saying it's in the majority of cases, it overlaps with hypothyroidism, mm-hmm. whichever one came first, right? But mm-hmm. the Hashi part is often overlooked. But how did you know it? Because your mom had it and you knew to look for symptoms, or what was happening?
Yeah, I want to say in some regard, I was lucky I got diagnosed at 25, because sometimes people go years without getting diagnosed and still having the symptoms. So I'll give a short version for the story, because this is at the age of 20, I was still in India at that point. I'm an Indian immigrant. I lost my gallbladder. My gallbladder was taken out because I had really painful stones. I'll connect that, how that made, I did not know what a gallbladder did at that point. I was like, just get me out of this. It was out. I'm fine. I've came on a very stereotypical path. I came to this country to do my master's, and I started working in corporate America, where I worked for more than 15 plus years. And around 25, when I went to see my regular OBGYN, luckily, I was lucky, she did, like, you know, these days the doctors don't even feel or touch, you know, to get, she felt my thyroid gland, and she's like, oh, this seems a little inflamed. You need to go see an endocrinologist. And then when I went to see an endocrinologist, I think by then my labs were already way above the standard normal ranges. I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's and hypothyroidism and put on medication. Mm-hmm. And after that, because I had no idea, even though my mom had it, but we don't talk about it, right? Or nobody, like, I was young and focused, like the symptoms I did have, like, you know, if everyone listening, if you're dealing with fatigue, I did, as a young 20-year-old, I wanted to nap at the middle of the day. I wanted to sleep. Because even there, it might not be great quality of sleep, but you're just so tired. I used to have a lot of muscle and joint aches. And as a 20-year-old, like, you don't even talk about it. Tell somebody, oh, you know, I have these stiff joints and muscle aches all the time. And, you know, now when I go back, I did have some, like, digestive issues too. But, you know, you just put a Band-Aid on it and go through it. So that's how I came to where I am today. Oh, I got Hashimoto's. And then seeing my mom get rheumatoid arthritis was, okay, if I don't change anything, I'm following her footsteps. I need to take my health into my own hands. And what conventional medicine is not talking about, they're just giving me a pill for every ill.
So I think a large amount of people, women specifically, are going to be put on thyroid medication at some point in their lives. I think it's a lot of them is earlier and earlier, but by the time we hit like 45, 50, I think the majority of women is going to have hypothyroidism, or is, at least from a conventional medical diagnosis perspective, and is going to be put on thyroid meds. So there's two questions there. A, is that going to solve my Hashimoto's problem? And B, the other question is, what marker is it that they're looking at to find out if I have Hashimoto's? Because if they're not telling me, are they even looking for it?
Yeah. So everyone, like, when you go to a conventional medicine, and I think the only test they'd run is the TSH, which is your thyroid stimulating hormone. That's about it. That's the only biomarker that's used to indicate, to see if you have a thyroid issue. And that's an incomplete picture. It's an important marker for sure, yes. But it, before things go haywire, you know, if they're on the full panel, which I'll mention what it is, could give a good picture. So thyroid TSH is just one part of the story. It's your brain sending the signal to your thyroid gland, hey, produce more thyroid hormone. And when we don't, and if the brain doesn't sense enough of the thyroid hormone in the system, it will scream louder. Excuse me, get more thyroid hormone. That's why it's so confusing, because if that value is high, that means your thyroid hormone is low, and it can get very confusing. Why that? Because the standard range is 0.4 to 4 is somewhere here. It's wide, right? It's normal. So that's one. You know, there's check TSH. If you're above 4, and actually in from functional optimal range, you want it to be tighter, like 1.2. And I think even in the functional medicine space, they want it to be even tighter, because you just want the brain to whisper, hey, and, you know, for it to do the job. Ideally, you know, that analogy is making sense. So that's one marker. The other marker is that you want to get is your free T4 and free T3. So once the thyroid gets the signal that, hey, I need to make the hormone, there are other hormones it makes too, but those are the two main hormones we'll talk about, hey, T4 and T3. And T4 is the inactive hormone. That's for everyone. And T3 is the active hormone that we need. So when we talked about every cell in your body has a receptor for your thyroid hormone, it's for T3, not for T4. So it produces that hormone. The thyroid will produce that hormone. It produces some T3 too, but 94, 95% is T4. And then your body, well, your liver and your gut. So we'll get into the gut question. I know we have to go back to that. Has to convert this T4 into T3. And then your body can take it, can absorb the hormone, and does what it needs to do. So that's why when... Please, everyone, I really, you know, when you go to your doctor, get a full thyroid panel, your TSH, your T4, your T3. Also, there's another aspect called reverse T3, because sometimes, you know, because your TSH could look normal, your T4, sometimes a lot of conventional medicine could be checking for T4, but they'll do the total T4, but it's not telling me the free portion of what's available. And then T3 could be the where, hey, everything is looking fine, but you don't have enough of the active hormone. And that's what your cells use for energy. And the reverse T3 marker, it's so hard to get in conventional medicine. Even my own doctor didn't agree to run it. I got it somehow. But that is like a break. So your body is sensing some stress going on, a lot of stress going on, and it's putting all its energy on the stress. And it could be, you know, perceived or real. It could be the gut infection stress, and it's putting the brakes on your T3, the active T3, and your reverse T3 is how. So there's a conversion issue going on there. So that's for thyroid. But for the Hashimoto side, the autoimmunity side, you want to get your TPO and TPG. There are big names. I'll just keep it simple. Those are the two antibody, those tests that will indicate if you have autoimmunity related to it as well.
And this is so important, because I think most people listening or watching have had on your annual blood work, it's exactly what you're saying. There's going to be TSH marker on there. If you dig a little deeper, you're likely going to get your total T4 and maybe your T3. But that's where it stops. And yes, sometimes we can see a correlation between those three markers, but that's that's not the full picture, right? And reverse, I think like you're saying, reverse T3 is really hard to get unless you pay out of pocket. And that might sometimes be helpful, but I think really the antibodies, like nobody ever looks in conventional medicine. Nobody looks at the antibodies. I think sometimes even endocrinologists, like I have clients who are Hashimoto's clients, and the endocrinologist does not frequently run antibodies. And I'm like, how can you not? This is the baseline for this person. This is where we see what their autoimmune condition is doing. Is it getting worse? Is it getting better? Is it staying where it is? How can you not run those markers?
And sometimes they'll just run it once and done, one and done. Yeah. Like they don't have to run. And that's the experience I had too. Even very recently, when I asked my doctor, hey, can we rerun those antibodies? And she said, why? We know we have Hashimoto's. Why do we need to run it again? And, you know, I want to say, you know, they're all good people. They're trying to do the best they can. And the system is overloaded. They have to spend like 15 minutes with one person. So I understand and respect that they're working within the system. They have been taught. But I'm like, I want to see if it's coming down, if it's trending in the right, because autoimmunity is something that if we will talk about the gut and, you know, if we are able to take care of the, our triggers and find our triggers, we can reverse the autoimmunity part and stop, get our immune system to calm down. So that's why it's so important to get those tested and periodically getting tested to see how they're going up, because my markers were in the thousands years. And then, yeah, and the last, the one I did recently in January, it's still, I still have it. It's in the hundreds. So, okay, it's trending down. It's, you know, I'm still a work in progress and still working on it, but okay. I'm like, okay, it's coming down and, you know, I want to do my best. Hopefully one day I'll get to reversing it.
Yeah. And you keep mentioning the gut. So let's dive into that. Like, what's the role of the gut? And then maybe probably in your journey that also played a big role to
absolutely. You know, Hippocrates said all disease begins in the gut, and I had an opportunity to, I'm going to change that. And I'm going to make Dr. Alyssa Song very famous and put like she quoted, I just had a chance to talk to her. Well, all health begins in the gut, like, you know, putting a positive spin on it, all health begins in the gut. So, and, you know, gut health, even in my story, when I started, when I got it at 25 and when I started looking into what do I need to do? Like, you know, okay, I'm going to do something, but what? And this was 16, 17 years ago. I'm not like, yeah, not in my 20s anymore for sure. And I didn't know how do you look for gut health? Nobody was talking about it, right, Anika? This was so, I think, late 2000s is when, you know, people start hearing about gut health or probiotics. So at that point, so what is the gut? And now I'm so glad it's at the forefront, but your gut is your hollow tube from your mouth, where you eat, to all the way at the bottom where you poop out. You know, it is what it is. You know, that's your hollow tube. And everyone might think, oh, this is, it's inside of us. But it's actually an interface to the outside world. This is how we eat, we digest our food, we are getting exposed to everything that's foreign to our system. Our breathing, we through our, what we breathe, what we touch, what we put on our skin, everything needs to go through this gut. And the thyroid, so that is gut. And the gut plays a huge role because A, we have these huge microbiome, right? Or gut bugs, you know, really simple. We have this huge families of bacteria, viruses, fungi, everyone living, you know, this ecosystem in there. And probably, no, not probably, we do have more of these gut bugs in us than our own cell. They're cells, you know, 10 times more cells, and they are interacting with us. They are connected with us. And for everyone, I love to give analogy. So think of all, hopefully everyone has a garden, has a backyard, have seen a garden, and we want it to be, it's springtime. So with flowers and everything looking lush, we don't want the weeds to take over. So that's what, you know, we want to preserve that gut environment, just like a garden. And sometimes when the weeds or the bad bacteria takes over, and that's number one, you know, that starts causing dysbiosis. That's number one, that can cause dysbiosis, and that could lead a whole host of different issues when we have dysbiosis. You know, some of it could be GI related. Mm-hmm. But our, and our gut is also connected to our brain. You know, that's what we can do while, like, another 2 hour episode on this. Yeah. But our gut is also connected to the brain, and it's communicating. So whatever is happening in the gut is happening in the brain, and vice versa. And that's why sometimes it could show up as sleep issues too.
Absolutely.
And so that's why anxiety, brain fog, these are all symptoms of, you know, low thyroid function. But also when your gut isn't optimal and or your brain isn't functioning, we see these issues all the time. So that's one. And the other way is the role that our gut plays is in digesting and absorbing the nutrients of our food, right? And it goes through the stomach, you know, well, in the mouth first, our digestion begins even in the mouth, even before it gets to the stomach, then our small intestine, it has to go through all that journey. And if we don't have enough of these good bacteria and the right enzymes to digest the food, we will not be able to extract all the nutrients. And I'm going to connect it all back to the thyroid to see how it's connected. So that's another place. So, you know, we need it for digestion and our immune system. We talked about immune system at the very top of this episode. 70 to 80% of our immune system lies in the gut. So, you know, the way the thyroid and the gut are connected is, you know, we, number one, you know, I mentioned the whole T4, T3, the hormone that our thyroid is creating, producing. It has to get converted. The T4 needs to convert it to the active form. So some of it happens in the liver. That's why the liver and gallbladder, if I go back, my gallbladder was taken out. Clue. If somebody had to dug deeper, why a 20-year-old, not overweight, seemingly healthy, what happened, had looked like, it's like the tip of the iceberg. What you saw was just the symptoms. But as we know, the depths of the iceberg could be far reaching. So a liver health really comes into play too of converting that. But a lot of the conversion from T4 to T3 also happens in the gut. And a gut produces an enzyme that makes that conversion. So now if our gut health is compromised, we don't have enough of the enzyme to convert the T4 to T3. Now that's one thing that could be happening. Your thyroid could be dysregulated. And even though you could be, TSH could be looking, because your brain is sending the right signal, but it's a conversion issue happening. And number two, and you know, I want to spend some time on it, is maybe your audience probably have had such amazing guests on, you talked about leaky gut. So this hollow tube that we have inside of from our mouth is an interface, and it's not very thick. It's only one cell wall thick. Think of it as just a very thin fence in your garden that needs to be tight. And its role is not to get anything that's not supposed to be in the bloodstream that we eat, any like big food molecules or fatty acids, what it's not supposed to be there, it keeps it in. And maybe especially with autoimmunity, you could have food sensitivities, or, you know, that's pretty much, you have a food sensitivity and that could start causing irritation. You have dysbiosis, you have a lot of bad bacteria growing. And that could now start irritating the gut wall, and this cell wall gets widened, gets bigger. Maybe it's just creating holes. And that's what is called a leaky gut. And now bigger food molecules are getting into the bloodstream that they're not supposed to be there. And our immune system is like on high alert now. Hey, what is this? It's not supposed to be here. Attack, attack, attack. Let's get it out. And that just keeps that vicious cycle of, you know, autoimmunity, like, you know, that can set the stage for it. But apart from that, could be very, you know, toxins are a huge trigger for the leaky gut as well. Environmental toxin, heavy metals, so much more. But that tight junction, a thyroid hormone also influences the tight junctions, that plays a role. So it could, you know, when your thyroid hormone is low, you can see how that could play a role in that loosening up that wall. Because it's a chicken and the egg problem. It's so hard to know what came first. So maybe someday we can figure it out, but that's how the thyroid hormone and the gut is connected in another way too. The other way the gut and thyroid are connected is, you know, thyroid plays a role in every body function, right? In indigestion, it also plays a role in your gut motility, which is how fast or slow the food is moving through your digestive system. And when you have low thyroid hormone, you have to just think low and slow. So low thyroid hormone, slow gut motility. So when you have slow gut motility, a lot of people with hypothyroidism could also be dealing with constipation. Mm-hmm. And then when constipation is, now you have toxins sitting in your system, inside your body for a long time, it can get reabsorbed as well. And that can also cause a whole host of, you know, shutting down your thyroid hormone. And sometimes it could be, you know, the chicken and the egg, because of gut dysbiosis and other gut issues, you could have constipation, and then in turn impacts your thyroid as well. Yeah, you will appreciate this too, Anika. Like when you have gut dysbiosis, like you could have parasites or fungus, you know, when it does take over, what they excrete out is ammonia. Mm-hmm. And we know that a buildup of ammonia has been tied to brain fog and frequent night waking as well.
Absolutely. And I, you know what, and people, and I see it in my clients all the time. Yeah. And I think in a lot of people, more than not, that people are always saying, we don't have parasites. We live in the Western world. Yeah, no, we travel. Not just do we travel, they're local. Like they're everywhere now. If you don't wash your food properly and you have low stomach acid, there's just no defense, right? They're not getting killed. If you eat a ton of sushi, like I almost guarantee you, if you have low stomach acid, there's likely something crittering around there. And totally, it's exactly that. If you wake up in the middle of the night, you can't sleep. These guys are at work.
Absolutely. And so it's so hard to separate the brain and the gut from that. And a lot of people with hypothyroidism, even I won't say even hyperthyroidism, you know, that's the other side of it. Your thyroid could be upregulated as well, but we don't see that as often, relatively speaking. But yeah, it's your sleep is dysregulated, your blood sugar is dysregulated as well, because it plays a role in your blood sugar regulation and then sleep issues. And you would think that a lot of my clients would come, I'm sure see insomnia comes into that's there. But personally, I didn't experience insomnia because I was like, you know, I'm so tired. I was so tired. I wanted to sleep, but it does not mean I'm getting good quality sleep. But when you, and sleep is so important, like, you know, it's for you to rest, repair, rejuvenate. And when you don't sleep well, it just puts such a stress on your whole body. So it can actually, even if you don't have an autoimmune condition, I think it can perpetuate or it can really push you to get one when you're not sleeping well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think it's so foundational, right? For healing and for thyroid. Like if you're stressed all the time because and you're not sleeping and your cortisol is high, your thyroid is going to not function optimally either, right? It's going to be like you're already running at 180 miles an hour. I don't know if I'm going to really push out a lot of TSH from the brain and say, make more thyroid hormone because you're like, you really need it. Your body's probably like, you're already quite high there. Maybe we're not going to stress you much more, right?
Yeah, because I know you talk about it all the time in your podcast, like cortisol is high or we are getting chased by a tiger or whatever it is. It doesn't know the difference. The brain is like, the HPT axis, shut it down because we don't need it right now. We need to take care. And the cortisol is high and that could also lead to sleep issues. And, you know, you brought the point when women, you know, all of us, I'm in my early 40s and a lot of people getting into this perimenopausal, this chapter of life, which is, it's, you know, it's not a disease to get it. It's just it is a transition. I want to celebrate it and hopefully it can be smooth. But yes, a lot of women may get into this hypothyroidism or this autoimmunity stage during this time too, because so much of the hormone fluctuations are going on and the cortisol is high, your progesterone is going low, and it could just put a whole whack-a-mole of things happening. And yeah, that's when they get diagnosed with hypothyroidism. The other time when most women may get diagnosed is when they're pregnant too, because again, a lot of hormone fluctuations at that time.
So, and then would then I get to put on whatever it is, maybe T4, maybe a combination product, depending on what's going on, maybe T3. That could potentially help my thyroid. But does that help Hashimoto's?
Yeah, it's two different. It could, it's two different functions. Like your hypothyroidism is your thyroid. So that medication is, we're helping you with getting your thyroid hormone back. Hopefully you don't have a conversion issue and just T4 is sufficient, but most likely not. You probably want to talk to your doctor or get the full lab panel to see, hey, there's no conversion issue. You may need some additional T3 as well. I had to really work with my doctor, really not push her to need T3, to get T3 as well, while you're working on your liver and your gallbladder health issue, because that's where a lot of conversion, and your gut health, that will help with the conversion. And, you know, the medication could, to a small degree, help with the autoimmunity, but but not a lot, because those are two separate. So when you want to work on your Hashimoto's or your autoimmune perspective, so you don't get another one, is, you know, you got to work on your gut. And I think even before working on your gut, and you know, it's not just, oh, get me those probiotics and throw that in. Unfortunately, I know now there's so much more information out there, and you know, the whole 5-hour programs out there. But you got to first, I like to test. Let's test, not guess what's happening. Let's, you know, we have now amazing technology tests available to us to get a good snapshot or baseline of, you know, how does your garden look like? In other ways, how much of the good bacteria do you have? How much of the bad bacteria? Which ones? Because Blastocystis hominis, I think, is one link to Hashimoto's. If you have that one, that's a good. Yeah, so there's more that can give clues to what's going on, and you know, how's your enzymes looking like? And these tests would not just should give you the presence of yay or nay, but also quantifies it, right? You know, there are tests, I'm sure you do it in your practice too. So that's number one, to test that. But then number two, before throwing, hey, you just can't throw probiotics, you need to start healing that, sealing that gut wall too, because otherwise the problem will just keep happening. You throw in the probiotics, but we have to close that fence, fix that fence. So I really love doing a food sensitivity test, because the food those are another triggers for that leaky gut, and finding out which food it is. The number one, if you have Hashimoto's, and if you have hypothyroidism, 95% you do, you want to take out gluten out of your diet. It is, as we know, the number one inflammatory food. And the reason it's highly recommended for Hashimoto's is the whole molecular mimicry, because the gliadin, which is a protein in gluten, is very similar in structure to our thyroid tissue. So when we have leaky gut, when we get these gluten molecules into the bloodstream, and our immune system is go attack, 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 and it can degrade your thyroid gland. And yes, I get a lot of questions, hey, but gluten has been part of our diet for hundreds of years. Yes, but not and it's also not the same. It's changed the GMO, the glyphosate that's been sprayed on gluten. It's not the same grain that our grandparents or even and our ancestors were consuming. So it's changed. So that's why gluten is another one of the foods, like dairy, and another food. So your soy, corn, those are the four key triggers, just the way because our whole agricultural system has changed. So taking out those food triggers while you're working with the practitioners who's helping you, getting you the right nutrients back in to help heal and seal the gut, because we are all deficient in minerals as well, and magnesium, and low magnesium sleep issues. That's why, like, again, linked to that. And we touched on parasites, but you know, there could be mold, there could be heavy metals. Those are all, and I think Anika, you mentioned low stomach acid, like H. pylori could, like 50% of the population has it, and that can reduce stomach acid. We really need to get those out and those toxins out. Then we can introduce the probiotics and all the other good foods. And you know, I'm not saying stop doing what you're doing in terms of, you know, you got to do the basics of eating a whole plant, not whole food based diet, the right amino acids, good amount of quality, organic as much as possible, sleeping well, you know, taking care of your oral health too, you know, that could be connected. You got to be doing all those things while you are cleaning up, optimizing your gut health. So that could really help with turning the dial on your Hashimoto's antibodies.
And I think now you've potentially put some people on high alert, or you might have lost them, but that's okay, because I hear it all the time, and it can be hard, and I understand it. Diet changes are some of the hardest things I find in my clients to do. Like if I tell them, go exercise, do this, they'll take these supplements, they'll do all that. But actually making those changes to their diet is often something that people struggle with. And I understand why. A, it could be comfort food. B, we've grown up a certain way. C, I'm cooking for a family. So now there's a discussion about my kids don't want to eat that, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a whole host of why that could be stressful. Or I'm working in an environment that has a cafeteria and they don't serve what you want me to eat. But let's, and I agree with you with these are the key things that aggravate our system. And in order to heal that, we need to take them out. Otherwise, we're chasing a goal we can't reach, right? Would you ever, for somebody who has Hashimoto's, would you ever reintroduce gluten, or would you completely leave it out after you've healed the gut?
Oh, such a great question, and something, you know what I miss? Good, a nice croissant. Is I a fluffy nice croissant. I definitely miss. Or I'm Indian. You know, Indian diet is a lot of wheat. It's a great question, and I would be lying to be like, you know, am I 100% gluten free? I'm 99%, but after years of staying off of it, I might occasionally indulge, but I'm doing it very intentionally, knowing I'm doing it for pleasure. And I know exactly, because I've studied, so I know exactly it's not going to help with my thyroid, because I haven't completely healed my Hashimoto's as well, right? So if I was fully in remission, definitely my body may not be reacting to gluten as much. You know, I might probably still have some leaky gut going on. So I'll do it knowing that, with that. So I would say if somebody has really gone through, healed their gut, and they have reversed, maybe occasionally for pleasure, to you can enjoy some gluten. And the reason is not more because of the gliadin, the protein, but it's also the glyphosate that is spread, especially in the US. I can't, you know, European countries have different standards, and, you know, they do seem to care more about the people and not the toxins that go in. So it's more for not getting in that toxic overload. I would highly, like, you know, recommend, if to still, it is hard. I still miss it. There are days. But now when I do eat it, and, you know, sometimes your body is the way you feel once you take it out. And when you have it again, you'll really notice how it makes you feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some days, you know, I give in, you know, I'm human too. You know, I want that. I will eat something, and then I feel bloated. I feel like I'm like the first trimester pregnant again. That's my symptom.
Mm-hmm.
And then that makes that, I'm like, oh, I don't want to feel that way. It doesn't feel good to trying to unbutton your jeans.
Yes.
So that helps me. Okay. You know, maybe that croissant will feel good for a few. I tell my client, everything tastes good only while they're on your tongue, not once going. So
the long time that it goes through the system, it will not, right? It's that minute that it's in your mouth.
It's a long-winded answer, but I think it depends. They can reintroduce it in small quantities, but that knowing they just know what you're doing it for pleasure, because we all like our desserts too. Sugar, we know sugar is poison, but we all enjoy it. I know what I'm doing. It's very intentional. Do it for pleasure and enjoy it. Don't feel guilty about it when you do.
I think that's great. And I think it's also great to see when you reintroduce things, what happens, right? Like, don't be afraid to try necessarily, but really listen to your body, because you've learned a lot on that journey with the practitioner about your body too. And then you can sense what happens. And then you might be like, oh, here and there is okay, but an entire bowl of pasta on Tuesday and the pizza on Wednesday is just too much for my system, or it just sits forever and I feel awful. I have low energy or whatever it is, right? And then I think you kind of become the best judge of your own system, which you kind of weren't sometimes before, because you kind of didn't put the puzzle pieces together. Go ahead.
Sorry, because sometimes when you eat gluten, it stays in your system for a long time too. So it can take you a few steps back. That's what I tell myself. Oh, I'm working so hard. Like, but that's just me, my psychology, how I figured out that helps stop me. It just lives into that system. That reaction can be for days or weeks that gluten could stay. But at the same time, you know, I just want to, like, we don't want to live in stress or that fear, because that is also a toxin. Oh, I can't eat this. Even that emotion is not healthy. So it's a good balance, because when I do go travel to Europe, or if I go, I've never been to Italy. When I go to Italy, I'm having that gluten pasta.
Oh yeah, you have to. And you're likely going to do better on it, because the way they make it, the process of making proper pasta in Italy is very different from how all the processed, not even like, even in where I was in Germany, it's still like the fast, super, like, it's not great, but the Italian is a whole different. What would you say, is there, what would be like your number one tip for somebody who's like, okay, I'm gonna do this, I know I either I know I have Hashis or I think I really should give gluten free a try. What would be a tip that you'd say, do this, try this?
First of all, like, you know, if it helps, don't think of it as forever. Just give yourself, okay, I'm doing it for at least 3 weeks. Give it 3 weeks, because it takes time for, as I said, the gluten that you've eaten stays in the system for a long time. So for you to feel the effect, 3 to 4 weeks, I would say, if you can give, or even if you want to start with 2 weeks. Sometimes I've had clients try for 2 weeks and they see a change. So one, setting the mindset. Two is, again, now there are so many more gluten-free products available in the market. When I started this journey, it was so hard. I'm like, I can't eat anything. So there are a lot of great gluten-free options. So if you do like pasta, there are great. I love Jovial brand. I'm not affiliated. I just like that brand because it's brown rice. And because a lot of gluten-free pastas also have corn in it. Mm-hmm. So that's, corn is another one I try to stay away from. But, you know, after starting the journey, make it easy for yourself. So you can enjoy your gluten-free pasta. There are, Siete is another one of my favorite brands, which has great gluten-free products and delicious almond flour tortillas. Again, not affiliated.
Oh, their chips are also amazing.
Yes, and they have great chips, and they have cassava. All the beans, it's great. So, you know, finding those alternatives is great. So definitely preparation will go a long way. You just have to stock your house. Your house, your fridge, with the right products. You know, getting the, if you're in pasta, the tortillas, like rice and quinoa are gluten free. You know, different kind of, you know, grains. If you are millet, again, that's again a lot more. But the starting, so you have options for your healthier grains. All lentils, legumes are gluten free. All fruits and vegetables are gluten free. So I want to think of it as positive, not that what you can't eat, but look at all the foods that you can still eat. So stock your fridge, your pantry with these products so you can put these meals in together. And there are great recipes you can find. So that's number two, stock. And number three is, when definitely, you know, it's hard not to eat out, you know, maybe want a meal, but definitely preparation, like, you know, looking at the menu before you go, hey, what can, and asking your server, hey, I'm gluten-free. What changes can they make? What alternatives that you can choose? So that will make, you know, that transition a little easier. And if you're going to somebody's house, just communicating your needs. Sometimes, you know, it's really hard. We are guests. We don't want to be a burden and tell everyone. But maybe take a dish of your own, hey, and bring it to share, like a quinoa salad to go for. So that will just prevent you from, when you're hungry and there's no other option, then your motivation is so low to stay on that path. And I think last, you know, as you go on that journey, it's, you know, really have to learn how to read the labels, because a lot of the condiments out there we don't realize has wheat in it. So just looking for gluten-free products, like, you know, soy sauce, number one that we could use is not gluten-free. So, but there is tamari, there's coco aminos that you can grab, you know, if you use a lot of ketchup, just looking for gluten-free option, just being more mindful of these different places where you could be getting gluten. So just a lot of steps, just reading the labels, and just think of it, all the options you can still eat. That could be a good place to start.
Great. Those are great tips. And maybe we can just, to wrap it up, but maybe we can just go back to the Hashimoto. Mm. So we have an autoimmune condition, and you had in the beginning talked about molecular mimicry, how the gliadin protein is so similar to the thyroid molecule, and that is why gluten is the number one thing to stop with Hashimoto's. Okay, I'm doing that. Are there like one or two other things where you'd say, this is something, if I have Hashimoto's, that's something I would do?
That's a great question. I'm trying to, because I think this gluten, it goes with, I think, any autoimmune condition. You know, you want to calm down that inflammation, that fire that is constantly burning inside of you. So, you know, finding your food triggers, your food sensitivity is important, and that could be different. When I did these tests, you know, spinach showed up as mine, and spinach is healthy, right? And yeah. I was eating a lot of it, you know, again, the leaky gut. So really finding those food triggers sensitivities, because then I'm like, I'm doing everything, it's still not working, right? So that's one from a diet perspective. And then reducing your toxin overload is as much as possible. It's so hard. We live in an environment that has a lot of toxins, but just cleaning up what, you know, your in yeah, cleaning products, your personal care products, your, you know, toxins from your cookware, there's just the plastics that we use, right? Just trying to slowly make changes so you are putting less burden on your liver, because again, your liver, gallbladder, it's all so connected, I would say. And, you know, honestly, you have to just, you know, that infections that could be going on underneath it, whether it's your parasite, whether it's candida, whether it's mold. I know we didn't touch on mold, but that could be one. Really working with the right practitioner and finding what's going on and getting it out. Otherwise, you will, you keep doing everything, and but those things still exist. And then they're creating, you know, endotoxins as well. The toxins that these bacteria, and then you're not able to put it out. So it's so hard to say. I wish they were simple, but, you know, those are some basics I would at least, you know, start with your diet, you know, the sleep. But again, sleep is connected with those. If you have parasites, they will be, could be keeping, you know, diet, sleep, reduce your toxic overload, exercise, don't stop. But sometimes when your body is in overstress, you can't, you know, like right amount of exercise and manage your stress, somehow figure out what works for you.
Yeah.
I wish there was something else, but yes, it goes back to the basics.
It goes, absolutely, I agree. It goes back to the basics. But I think the reward of potentially putting an autoimmune condition into remission and preventing the body from going down that path of having another one is a huge reward, right? Yes, we have to put the effort in now.
Yeah.
But I think it's very much worth the effort.
Absolutely. That's my goal and my dream. You know, you want to live a full life for as long as you live, you know, as we're talking, like, and it's people that say it's so normal. Oh, we are aging. It's so normal. We are, things are going to fall apart. It doesn't have to be that way. And, you know, let's do what we can. No, there's no way to guess what's going to happen. There's no magic bullet. No magician can, you know, crystal ball can look what's going to happen in the future. But whatever we can in our control, do the best we can so we can enjoy our 60s, 70s, 80s, no matter how long we live.
Exactly. That's my goal. And healthily, right? For as long as we live. Yeah. I think that's really the thing, right? Who wants to be ill for 20 years and then turn 90, but the last 20 years of your life were, you were ill, right? That's not fun either.
No, you want health span, not just lifespan. And some in our conventional system, they are very good about giving you lifespan, but they don't promise health span.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Thank you so much, Divya. This was great. Where can people find you?
They can go to my website, divyagupta.net. Is one place. And they can also download the tests that I talked about. I know there's so much information, but I created a guide with a comprehensive a list of symptoms, because hypothyroidism symptoms are vast. It can be extensive. So I've listed a ton, and then also the labs that we talked about and what the optimal values and what they are. So you can take that and tell your doctor, I want these tests, so they can have something handy for sure. And also on Instagram at underscore Div Gupta. I know you'll have it on the show notes. That's where they can find me as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We will link to all of that. Go grab that guide, because that is really, it gives you really something to bring to your doctor to have a conversation and say, you know what, we need to dig into this. I'm having lots of these symptoms. Can we have a conversation? And if they're not willing to, maybe honestly, really go find somebody who is willing to have that conversation with you, because those are things we need to get on top.
Yeah, you can fire your doctor and get a new doctor.
Yes, that's your right to do that. Thank you so much.
No, thank you, Anika. I'm so honored and grateful for getting this platform, and it was such a great conversation. I absolutely loved it.
Thank you. And thank you everybody for watching and listening. And we will be back soon with another episode. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sleep Like a Boss podcast with me, Anika Carroll. Be sure to follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts. We also invite you to play the game of sleep with us, if you haven't done so, at sleeplikeaboss.com. This podcast is for informational purposes only. We hope you enjoyed the episode. And until next time, and to a good night's sleep.